Sean, we're catching up with you in Helsinki for this episode of the At The Rink podcast. And I have one question for you. Has Pavel Francouz woken up yet?
He has woken up, but there's nobody in the NHL that might have a better sense of humor than that kid. Because that, for the people who don't know, that didn't read the story, it is one of the epic pranks I've ever seen in the NHL. Their plane broke down in New York City. They were late flying out. They eventually had to switch planes. Pavel got on the plane and he fell asleep immediately. Headphones on, eye patches over his eyes, ready to live the life. They tell everybody that they got to switch planes. Everybody gets off. Landeskog and I think it was Landeskog and maybe Rantanen make everybody go around Francouz so he doesn't wake up. They all go down one aisle to get off the plane. And Francouz sound asleep. And they empty the plane. They leave the traveling secretary on with a camera. And then they send a stewardess to go wake him up and tell him he's in Finland. And he wakes up and he looks around and there's nobody on the plane. And the stewardess is saying he's in Finland. And he's like, wow, what the hell?
What a sleep that was.
Yeah. And then he figures it out. He gets off the plane. He gets to come on the new plane. He gets a standing ovation. So we're doing a blog with him. International, NHL.com International's doing it. They weren't there on time the first day, so I picked it up. And without knowing what happened, I'm like, how was the flight? He's like, let me tell you the prank the boys pulled on me. Like, most players would be like, I'm not mentioning this. He was like, let me tell you what happened. And then the funniest part was like, oh, well, so you slept all that time. Now you got on the plane. What'd you do for the flight over? Did you watch movies? Did you play cards? He goes, I slept. So he slept for however long the delay was, got in the new plane, got in his new little pod, got himself all set up again, and then slept for another 7 hours. He slept more on the flight over than I've slept since I've gotten here.
It is an epic story. It really is. I loved reading it. You did a great job writing it. It's a terrific story. And it kind of goes to show that the team, the camaraderie among the boys and and this type of trip, as you well know, you've done these before, as have I, and you're in Helsinki right now. They're going to be playing the Global Series games against the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Avalanche are in Tampere, and these are bonding trips. Like, I mean, everybody's in it together and they're bonding trips. And these are the types of things that really do bring teams together. I mean, I think, weren't you in Sweden with the Tampa Bay Lightning when they were kind of struggling coming out of New York, similar to what the Avalanche are right now. And they went over there and they brought it all together and the boys came together and they started to play well. And what did they end up? 3 straight Stanley Cup finals since then. Right. I mean, it's been that kind of run for them. That's what these trips are. And that's what like the behind the scenes stuff at the Global Series, at these international events within the team, that's really the good stuff.
Oh, it's amazing. And you just think about it, like, they need this, the Avalanche. Like, they're trying to figure out who they are. They have some injuries. They've changed some things, changed goaltending up a little bit. They're trying to figure out who they are. And they're on like an epic 15-day road trip, right? They spent a week in New York. Things didn't go well. They beat the Rangers in a shootout, and then they lost to the Devils 1-0. And then they coughed up a late lead to the Islanders and lost 5-4. So they're not happy, but they did. They have an opportunity to come over here. It starts off poorly with some mechanical issues that happens when anybody travels. It took me 23 hours to get here, mm-hmm. Because of some delays and whatever, and those things happen. That's part of travel. But they've rebounded. They had the good prank with Francouz. The guys have gone out for dinner. I'm doing the blog. I did it with Josh Manson today, and he talked about going out to dinner, and the big joke is everybody's going to eat reindeer at some point, right? Mm-hmm. And are you going to eat Rudolph or not? And he tried it and he's like, it was good. Salmon soup. He's like, I've never had any of this. I was a little afraid. He's like, it's all great. And that's all part of it, right? And the players Rantanen for them and Lehkonen, they get to show off their culture for Columbus. It's Line A. And it's Korpisalo, and they get to do the same things. So, they've been to sauna. Columbus had a Finnish comedian come in and do a bit. And, Nick Blankenberg is doing the other blog for us. And he's like, when you're in a bad way, like, laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah.
And he's like, it was great for us all to sit as a group and laugh and have fun at each other's expense. And if any team needs to get mentally right, it's the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, they're in a really bad way. They lost 7-1 to the Devils before they got on a plane. I can't imagine there were many pranks pulled on that plane. That had to be a pretty grim flight over here. Yeah. But now they have an opportunity to spend a week and kind of refocus, and they're away from all the noise, and they can figure it out and they can have some fun. But, you know, today's Tuesday and the games are Friday and Saturday. They've hit the ice for the first time. Each team skated for over an hour, and they'll have tomorrow off to do some sightseeing. And then Thursdays are the open practices, and then games on Friday and Saturday. And they should be really interesting. The thing that excites me the most is to see Patrick Laine play in Tampa Air, where he grew up, where he is a cult hero. Jarmo said it will be like a rock star. Jarmo Kekalainen and the GM said it will be like a rock star going into play in his home arena. That's how popular Laine is. And in case you forgot, the last time he was in Finland, they played he was with the Winnipeg Jets. Hat trick, first game, goal, second game. So, you know, I think I asked Patrick, I had him for a few minutes alone today, and I asked him, you know, are you going to top that? And he's like, well, I don't know if I could top that. He's like, right now, I just like our team to get 4 points. But, you know, the bar is going to be pretty high for him. And you know, Brad Larson, the coach, said today, he said, he's so excited. Like, he's dancing out there on the ice. Like, and I'm like, do you need to temper that? And he's like, no, I want to see more of it.
Yeah.
So it the next few days should be really interesting.
Yeah, that's good stuff. We'll get some more Global Series flavor from our guest, Mike Zeisberger, who's our Toronto-based staff writer for NHL.com. We'll talk a little Global Series stuff with him because he's with you, Sean, out there in Finland. And we'll do a lot of Leafs as well with Zeis. We'll play that interview for you shortly. But before we do, so you're going to be seeing a game in a unique environment for the NHL. I saw a game in a unique environment in the NHL, being at Mullet Arena on Friday night. We're recording this on Tuesday, like you said. Friday and Saturday are the game, the Global Series games. I was in Arizona for their opener at Mullet Arena on the campus of Arizona State University. And by the way, Sean, as a U of A guy, University of Arizona alum, like, my skin was burning when I was there. It was very painful to be there for me and seeing all this ASU stuff, forks up, all this stuff. But they've done a terrific, and it pains me to say this too, they've done a terrific job there of building one of the most beautiful college arenas you will see. It is a perfect college arena. The player areas, the coaches areas, those are unbelievable. The sight lines are terrific. The ice is, you know, the Coyotes players were commenting on it, how great the ice is there. There is not a, if you want to go to an NHL game, you're not going to get a better seat for an NHL game to feel the energy of an NHL game, and particularly us in the media. Right, we're always up in the big press box all the way up top. Well, we were right there, right above the seating section there. It was a really cool vibe. I got to tell you, I mean, I enjoyed it. I was excited for the game against the Winnipeg Jets on Friday night, and it lived up to my expectations of what it could be. The students there were great. There were kids dressed up because it was close to Halloween. I talked to a few of them. Like, I think the lead to my story was the pineapple. The banana and the penguin had to remove their mullets for the national anthems because they handed out mullets, really leaning in to the Mullet Arena thing, which, by the way, is the name of a family that donated to the ASU for the arena. But my biggest, and it comes with a but, my biggest concern or question is, how's this going to look a couple of months from now? When really, as one of the fans said to me, when the Coyotes are in the Connor Bedard sweepstakes, right? I mean, when they're doing that, how's this going to look? What's it going to play like? What's it going to, the vibe going to be like then? That's the test. That's the big test. But for now, and I watched the game that they played Sunday against the Rangers, it looks cool. The vibe's cool. It is what it is. It's temporary, and nobody's saying this is a great solution. Nobody's saying this is everything they want it to be. It's temporary, but they're managing the situation, and really, as I've mentioned, like, leaning into the whole idea of it.
I have no issue with where they're playing or how they're doing it. Like, again, to me, the short-sightedness and the lack of historical knowledge of so many fans blows me away. Like, does anybody remember Greensboro?
Right.
Does anybody remember the Cow Palace? Does anybody remember where Tampa played their first games?
Correct.
Like these are elite franchises now, right? You're talking about a team that's won multiple Stanley Cups. You're talking about a team that's won a Stanley Cup, been to a couple of finals and is a favorite this year. And you're talking about a San Jose team who's not as good this year, but had a really good run, never won the cup, but was elite for several years. And who, when they're good, the Shark Tank might be one of the best buildings in the league. All come from really humble beginnings. Their franchise stories are humble. Like Greensboro was a disaster, right? Like, but that's what they had to do to get to where they are. Like sometimes teams have to take, franchises have to take really painful steps to become who they're going to be. And it takes time and you know, this immediacy and this need to have the best of everything immediately is not always the way, and it can't always be the way. So like I just look at the history of the NHL and I see those teams that all had to do something that they didn't really want to do. And that's how I look at the Arizona Coyotes and you know, do they want to do this? No, they want to be in a 20,000 seat state of the art arena that could compare with anybody, and they could, you know, go after free agents and they could do what they wanted to do, but it's going to take them time to get there. And this is the bridge.
And the difference is obviously they're in what I think their 27th or 26th season, right? I mean, but they're essentially starting over. And this franchise has just been, you know, I mean, it's been beaten down, you know, over several years. But there's the thing about it is there's finally a plan in place. Like there's going to be a vote this month, November, on that arena, that entertainment, the Tempe Entertainment District that they want to build with the brand new state-of-the-art arena. There's going to be a vote on that. From everything I've heard, it has support from the Tempe City Council. It has the support to be able to get done. And then it's going to take 3 years, maybe four, to get it done, to build the whole thing, because they have to clean the site and then they got to build the arena. That could take 30 months to just do that alone, right? So there's patience required here. And this is the solution. This is what we have right now. And the other thing about it, there was a lot of talk about the makeshift locker rooms that the teams had. Four games. That's what they're there for. Four games. Because the Coyotes did not want to have their team start on the road for 2 months. The annex that they're building that's attached to the arena, that's going to have state-of-the-art medical facilities, state-of-the-art NHL training rooms, locker rooms, all that stuff. It's not going to be ready until their home December 9th against the Boston Bruins. They didn't want to start 2 months on the road, so they had to do makeshift locker rooms. The NHL, the NHLPA, the teams were all consulted and everything about it. It's four games. It's four games. That's all we're talking about here, right? So there is a short-sightedness to it. Again, my only concern for this, and I thought it was a cool environment, my only concern for it is it's not going to be a good look if the seats aren't filled. It's only 5,000, right? So they got to fill it. And they say they will. So I hope they do. But there is hope for this franchise now for a bright future with the way that they're running their hockey ops and with the way that they're running at the executive level and the ownership level.
Yeah, but the bar is much lower now. Like even bad teams draw 5,000 fans.
Right.
But they get spread out all over the place. And you're like, oh, there's nobody in the building. Now they're going to be right on top of the ice. Like I think it's a perfect solution for a team that's growing.
I think it can create a unique home ice advantage for the Coyotes. I really do. And I hope it does, because that, and that's what we were talking to Christian Fisher from the Coyotes about this. He said, visiting teams are not going to want to come play here. Like they're not going to want to be here. Like it's a different environment for them. The roof's low, the scoreboard's weird. It's smaller. They're not going to be able to get used to it. We're going to get used to it, is what he was saying. And it can create a unique home ice advantage. So I think it'll be really interesting to see where it goes. I mean, obviously they're going to be there for at least 3 years. So lean into it as they did. Brought it up before though, Sean, your partner, I don't want to say partner in crime, but maybe it is.
There's been no crimes yet.
No crimes. All right. Your partner there out there in Helsinki, Mike Zeisberger. We jumped on with him a little while ago to talk a lot about Global Series and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Here's that interview with Zeiss. Zeiss, thank you so much for joining us. Like Sean, you are in Helsinki for the Global Series. So give us a little rundown. What do you think of Helsinki so far?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I've been to Sweden a couple times before, a handful of times, but I've never been here. The people are tray friendly. You know, hockey is such a buzz here. I know Jarmo Kekäläinen, the general manager of the Blue Jackets, obviously first European general manager in the National Hockey League back in his home country. And he told me something the other day, Dan, that, that kind of puts things into perspective. He said that back in May, I believe it was May, when the World Championships were on and Finland beat Canada in the gold medal game in, by the way, the brand new sparkling rink where these two global series games will be played in Tampere. I can never roll.
No, it doesn't roll off.
Roll the R's for ten, you know, the Finnish people Tempera. Can do that Scottish. Shit. There oh, you
could,
go.
You could do
I
it.
I didn't know you were Scottish. But he said that for that gold medal game, there's 5 million people that live in Finland. 2.5 million of them watch that game. Now, if I use my abacus correctly from grade 3 math, that would be 1 out of 2, Dan.
Sounds kind of like Canada. Sounds kind of like the Toronto Maple Leafs. If they are, here we go. Right. Had to get there. Had to
and
get
then
there.
Depression set in.
Yeah. Come on. No, I've been to Helsinki. It is a great place. They love their hockey there. They love their hockey in Toronto, as you well know. Mm-hmm. So let's go there, Zyes. The Toronto Maple Leafs, that was a tough Western trip for them. They won the first game. They lost the next 4, 1-2-2 on the trip. They've lost 4 in a row, as I said. And here's the thing. 9 goals in the 4 games, right? So is the world, and I know you're not there right now, but from everything you know, is the world blowing up in Toronto? Or is there an understanding of, hey, you know what? That was a tough trip. We got 8 of our next 10 at home. Here we go.
Well, if by blowing up, you mean, is the earth scorched for a few blocks around the Scotiabank Arena? It's on the verge. We've seen some embers burning up. Okay. So, I mean, you brought up a good point in that, you know, their defense has been just so porous. And, you know, if it hadn't been for Samsonov in net, it could have been worse. But the fact is, Austin Matthews has 2 goals, Dan. Okay. The guy that scored the Maurice Richard Trophy, 60 goals last year, has 2. In no way am I putting this all on Austin Matthews. But what I am saying here is, you know, this is a team, you know, and the general manager, Kyle Dubas, has decided to keep the core despite all the playoff stumbles, okay, of 4 forwards, Tavares, Marner, obviously Matthews, and then Nylander. Well, that's about half your salary cap, $40 million for 4 guys. What are you paying them to do? You're paying them to score, and they're not scoring. And that's twofold. That's not all on them, but that also shows that you're not getting supplementary scoring behind those guys. So I think, you know, I mean, here's the thing. We went through this last year. I may have been on this podcast 365 days ago before they went into Chicago when the earth really was seared around the Air Canada. You know, look at Air Canada Center now, Scotiabank Arena.
Yeah, I got you.
And then they had a come from behind win in Chicago and they just took off. So I think that, you know, people got to calm down. What did Aaron Rodgers of the Green Bay Packers say a couple of years ago? RELAX to the fan base. But at the same time, you know, the people there, it's wash, rinse, repeat. And the Leafs haven't been playing good. And as much as Sheldon Keefe is getting a lot of heat, at some point, doesn't it have to be the players that pick this up? Because if you watch those Western games, and I didn't see the one in Anaheim, I was en route over here. But I was in Vegas when they lost a week ago Monday, and then they lose in overtime to San Jose, they lose to the Kings. Those games I did see. You can hardly say that any one of their players outside the goalie played well, and sometimes it's the same thing that I feel in Vancouver, guys. I mean, it's great to say, oh, it's on the coach, but at some point, it's got to be on the players.
Can't be on the players if the coach isn't allowed to put it on the players. Mm-hmm. Sheldon Keefe tried to put it on the players, said his elite players weren't playing, and it caused a huge uproar. He walked it back. he said, oh, that's not what I meant. The players need to understand this is what I meant. So, yeah, at some point, the players have to say enough's enough. And I think in Toronto, they will say that. Look, we talk all the time about what a team is and what a team has and how history proves that. They haven't won in the playoffs, but this is an elite regular season team for years now.
Yeah.
What's changed? Nothing. We're talking about a four-game sample out west. A lot of teams go out west and get their lunch handed to them. The Pittsburgh Penguins just went out west and got steamrolled.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even look like a Stanley Cup contender when after the first six games, we're like, oh, this could be the best team in the East. Look, Sidney Crosby's back. If Jenny Malkin's back, Tristan Jarry's going to win the Vezina. This is going to be fantastic. And then all of a sudden they go out west and they just get absolutely stomped. And now you're supposed to completely change your tune and be like, this isn't a good team. Like, going out west is tough. Just like coming east is tough for west teams. Like, that's part of why you play an 82 game schedule and why you have these lulls in these valleys. Like, I understand it's Toronto. I understand people are going to lose their mind over every little thing, but to me, it's barely a blip on the radar.
But I will say this, and you brought up the point about him having to go back on what he said. Why? There was no reason. All he said it was, our elite players aren't playing like elite players. What is wrong with that? How thin-skinned do you have to be? And I think, for the most part, I've been in Sheldon's corner. I will identify the warts, whether it's in game planning or something, when he does slip up. I think that he is very, the second that he said after they lost to Tampa that we got more respect than the handshake line, he knew that was the wrong thing to say. But there was nothing wrong with saying our elite players aren't playing like elite players. And if a comment like that, a general comment, gets under the skin of the players too much, and I'm not saying it does, but there are some people in Toronto in the media that are kind of taking that slant. Well, does this team have the fortitude to go deep in the playoffs, which we haven't seen they have? If they take exception to a vanilla, which I consider to be a vanilla comment like that in October, I mean, I just think that you have to toughen up a bit. When he walked that back and said, let me clarify what I tried to say, there's nothing to clarify because he was right. His elite players aren't playing like elite players. And maybe, and I'm not saying this is the case, but you start getting suspicious after a while. Like, is this, have the Leafs, and look, it, I understand why, but created an environment. I mean, they have more support staff than probably an entire division in the NHL. But have they, and I hate to use this term, but it's been used with Leafs teams in the past, has the organization created a country club atmosphere where everything is provided for them? You don't want to peeve them off, and that they're, that you can't say anything about that. And I really do think that sometimes, a little tough love is the answer. I mean, and I keep going over this over and over and over because I don't see anything wrong with what Sheldon Keefe said.
Well, yeah, and I agree with you. I thought it was quite vanilla as well. Was a little bit surprised he walked it back. But here's my thing with the Leafs. And Zize, and Sean, you mentioned it. Zize, you brought it up too, is the fact is that we know this team can score. Look, what Austin Matthews is going through right now is a shooting slump.
Yep.
He's going to break out. Mitch Marner is in the same way. He's going to break. The guy scored 35 last year. Matthews scored 60, right? They're going to score. And I would bet you a month from now, we're looking at the Toronto Maple Leafs playing much better hockey over their next 10 games. And with, like I said, eight of them are at home. They're away. Sean, you're 100% right. That West trip is tough for the East teams. Matthews will score. Marner will score. Things will get better. Things will get a little rosier. Everything will be fine. But what has changed with this team And that question will not be answered unless or until they make the playoffs, right? Walker, and that's not a guarantee. And I've heard that from people in Toronto, like, well, it doesn't matter until April. They got to get to April, okay? Yeah. They have to get there. And there are teams in their division that are better now. Than they were. I'm not saying they're better than the Leafs. I'm saying Buffalo and Ottawa and Detroit, they're better this season than they were last season. It's not going to be as easy, okay, as it was last year. They got to get there. And what has changed? You look at the championship teams, and I'm touching on this in my weekly mailbag. It's going to run Wednesday. You look at the championship teams, the Blues, the Penguins, the Lightning, right? These teams, what they do, they developed over the years a sort of like a hard exterior, right? I mean, like a real, not a toughness like they were the grittiest teams. No, they're just this ability to handle anything that came their way. And they added as they went along. St. Louis added Ryan O'Reilly, huge player for them when they won the cup, right? I mean, Ryan McDonagh in Tampa Bay, Phil Kessel and Nick Bonino in Pittsburgh, the impact that those guys had, right? Nothing has changed in Toronto over six consecutive playoff series losses. Now, will it change this year? Zies, they got to get there. And that's the biggest issue for me right now.
Well, the one thing, Dan, that has changed is that they have gone through this assembly line of goalies. It was Fred Anderson for the first few years, and then obviously Campbell. And now this year, their goaltending duo, although and I'm on record as saying this, I find the whole Matt Murray thing head scratching. What evidence was there? Yeah, he was great for them in Sault Ste. Marie. Yeah, he won a couple of cups in Pittsburgh. What evidence is there to show that in the last 3 or 4 years, he's anywhere near that? And the fact that they picked up the bulk of the salary and Ottawa didn't, I just don't understand that. At the same time, you know, people like to point to the goaltending in these, and you mentioned the six playoff losses. How about the fact that they have lost five consecutive deciding postseason games, which has never been done by an NBA team, by an MLB team, or an NHL team before that? I think to blame the goalies is a cop-out. You paid $40 million of your salary cap to four guys, and you got outscored by Nick Paul in game seven of the series against Tampa last year. So, you know, they try to change the periphery. And look, I get it. Like, Kyle Dubas had a plan. And when COVID hit, you know, before that, they expected the cap to keep going up. So those big salaries they handed out to the four guys they talked about, they could get better players around them. But it is what it is. COVID hit, flat cap, every team had to go through it. You know, this team's inability to want to change the heart or the core of it, and I'm talking about on the ice and off the ice as well, is a little head scratching. Especially when you see good coaches like, you know, Peter DeBoer, Butch Cassidy get fired by their teams last year. You know, Vegas, as you know, Dan, I mean, they half their team was injured for a lot of the year. Cassidy, I mean, I thought he was doing a good job in Boston with an aging roster. And in fact, I wrote on the weekend, like, a year ago, John Cooper's assistant coaches for Team Canada were Trotz, were DeBoer, and were Cassidy, okay? So they're putting together, they've been handpicked. They were the selections of John Cooper, who I think all three of us agree is a great evaluator of talent on and off the ice and coaching as well, to coach some of the best players in the world. And 6 months later, every one of his assistant coaches had been fired by their NHL teams. Yep. And yet in Toronto, and this is, you know, you got to be of a certain age to remember this, but the old Charlie Brown cartoon, there's Lucy and she's holding the football. And she says, Charlie Brown, I guarantee that I will not pull the football away. So you come kick this field goal and all will be good. And every single time, no matter what she says, whoop, she pulls that football away. And I think that's the point that Leaf fans are at right now, because nothing has changed. And every spring, Lucy keeps pulling the football away.
So, how many long drinks did you have before this podcast?
Long drinks?
Yeah, the long drinks we had last night. How many did you have before the podcast? I don't understand what you want to do here. You want to break up the core? You want to fire the coach? Like, what do you want to do?
What do I want to do? I think that the accountability starts with the general manager. He's the one that's built the team. And they've had, that's great. Regular season success. Okay. And as I said, I do like Kyle, but it's his direction to keep the core together. And it hasn't worked. Well, they want to, now they're beating the drums in Toronto, from what I read, that they want, the coach is on the hot seat. Well, Kyle Dubas hired Sheldon Keefe in the OHL with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. And then he hired him as the coach in the AHL for the Toronto Marlies. And then he hired him in the NHL for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So three different leagues, and he's hired the same guy, and they've had success. But at some point, okay, it's the architect of the guy who picks a coach and the guy who has constructed this team. That, to me, is where the responsibility lies. At some point, you can't, even if it is the coach, it's not working. And how many chances are you going to have to do to prove that it's not working? I think that we would all agree that under Barry Trotz, players played above expectations in a lot of cases.
Not with the Washington Capitals, they didn't.
Last I saw, he's got a ring.
How many years did it take him to get that ring? How many times did they want to fire him?
Dude, they won.
How many times did the Washington Capitals underperform? And the core should have been broken up.
Hey, listen, you make a good point, but here's the difference, okay? Maybe they came up short, but at least they won a playoff series, which this franchise has not done in 18 years, and you can't be blind to that. But nobody can.
Who cares? If you don't win at all, does it matter?
Yeah,
it does. One or three rounds, does it matter?
It does in Toronto. I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong, but it does matter. And that is why people are frustrated. I mean, Sean, I can't speak to the teams that the Washington Capitals beat. Is there anybody on this panel that feels that the Columbus Blue Jackets had a more talented team than the Toronto Maple Leafs? And then the following year, that the Montreal Canadiens had a more talented team than the Toronto Maple Leafs? And then all of a sudden last year, it's like, well, there was that narrative, well, they got a bad draw. They're playing the defending Stanley Cup champions. Well, what about the previous 2 years? And that goes to Dan's point, okay? There is change at certain points. Teams that are trying to win the cup, okay, will do changes. They will try to, switch their lanes, do something like that. And, I just haven't seen enough of it in Toronto, and it's just the same thing.
Well, yeah, and you touch on the coach, and we're not here to fire a coach or any
no
belief like that. But, I mean, you look at St. Louis, they brought in Craig Berube, win the cup, mm-hmm. Pittsburgh brought in Mike Sullivan, they, after some lean years in the playoffs, they won the cup. They kept getting there, but they weren't doing anything. Trotz eventually got the Capitals to do the same thing. It's different with Jared Bednar. Jared Bednar's kind of grew with the Avalanche.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of a different story. But this is why, like, if the Toronto Maple Leafs ever go and win the Stanley Cup, what are we going to talk about? Like, this is like we could talk, honestly, Zayas, we could talk all day about the Toronto Maple Leafs simply because we joke that it's the center of the hockey universe. It is, pretty much. And whatever they do there becomes a huge story. If they were to ever go win the Stanley Cup, I mean, nobody in Toronto would have anything to talk about.
Hmm.
They wouldn't.
No, I guess they'd be, well, they'd be drunk for 3 months.
Well, that's fine. But then the next season would come around, they'd go 0-2 and be like, this team stinks. Forget it.
Right,
you know, anyway, I look, you were, I wanted to change the subject real fast before we let you go.
Yep.
And I know you got some writing to do here because you are in Finland for the global series with Sean, having some, what was it? Tall drinks, Sean?
Long drinks.
Sorry. Tall, long.
Long drinks.
On a long night. You were, though, in Vegas recently, and that team right now, and I wanted to quickly hit on them. You were there with, you know, the Phil Kessel stuff was going on, so that was really interesting, you know, him getting the Iron Man record. But you look at the Vegas Golden Knights, and I think Bruce Cassidy is – I thought he did a terrific job in Boston.
Yep.
As you mentioned, Zyes, I thought he did a good job last year in Boston, but they made the change, and it's hard to argue with the change in Boston right now. They're playing very well under Jim Montgomery, but Vegas, as we record this right now, is 8-2, 8-2-0, and the goaltending – has been outstanding. Logan Thompson and Adin Hill have been outstanding. We know the difference good goaltending makes and health. I mean, do you look at, Zyes, you were there. I mean, what's the vibe? And do you think, is this sustainable for the Golden Knights?
I do think so. I you know, I've known Bruce Cassidy since he was a player with the Ottawa 67s. I have an overwhelming amount of respect for him. I think he's the type of coach, kind of like a Mike Sullivan, that the first time around when he was, you know, Sully, before he got to Pittsburgh in his stint in Boston, there was a feeling out process. We know that Cassidy was the same when he coached in Washington. But I just think there's this quiet confidence of that Vegas team. They have so much good leadership. I mean, you know, no matter, you know, Mark Stone, Alex Pietrangelo, you know, they moved on from Pacioretty, who again was one of those guys that always seems to be hurt. And this is not a shot at Robin Lehner, but I just think it was time to move on from that. And it's too bad because I have a lot of respect for him, but he's hurt all the time. And the one thing that, you know, among the fan base and the media in Vegas, they look at Logan Thompson and they keep waiting for the clock to strike midnight and this kind of Cinderella story just to turn into a pumpkin, to use a Halloween analogy. And it hasn't happened yet. And, you know, when Adin Hill's had to step in, he's played very well too. So I think there is a lot of confidence in Vegas. And I think that they look at their team and say, you know what, we're finally healthy. This is what we can really do. And, you know, I thought they would take a step back. Shame on me. But I thought Boston would take a step back, too. I thought they were an aging team. And so far, they've done well. But, Dan, like you said, we've only had 3 weeks of hockey so far. So, you know, overreaction, whatever day of the week it is.
Yeah, and look, I think when you look at Vegas, right, like that's the biggest thing. You have to look at their goaltender and say, can they do this? Like Logan Thompson's a great story. It's a Tim Thomas story, right? Play forever, finally get called up, make an impact, you know, make a legacy. Like it's great if he's able to do that. How many goalies have done it in the NHL? There's a reason goalies sit in the AHL until they're 26, 27 years old because they're tweeners. Right. And so for this guy to buck those trends would be fantastic. Is he Robin Lehner? I don't know. I mean, I always find it amazing as a broken down old man myself now that we blame players for getting hurt. Like it's stupefying to me that that's a bad character. Well, he's always hurt. Well, it's a tough game.
Yeah.
I'm always hurt too. I don't do anything.
Obviously not for Phil Kessel today.
Yeah. You guys going to hold it against me because I'm always hurt? Like that's just part of the sport. Like
I got to say Sean didn't look like that last night. Dan, he was like eyeing the dance floor. They were playing tunes last night at this alleged Irish bar that were played when I was in college, okay? So, you know, we're going back centuries. So you can imagine how that was. And, you know, it was Sean didn't look like the broken old man that he claims he is.
It's just too bad it was an Austrian death machine. That's Sean's vibe right there. But Zyes, look, we're going to let you go.
That's tonight. We're going to the
Metal Bar. Tonight. All right. There you go. Zyes, we'll let you go. You know, get some writing to do. Maybe, you know, if our producer Bob Bender is really good, he'll play you out with some Austrian death machine as well. Probably not.
thanks for having me on, and kudos to Sean today, because I said the wheels kind of fell off a little bit on what we were supposed to do, and he is carrying the workload, four stories compared to my one, and once again I'm just riding the easy train.
As always, enlightening and entertaining stuff from our colleague Mike Zeisberger, Sean, who I would imagine you will be seeing shortly after we're done recording this podcast as well. But I liked his take on Vegas with Cassidy, and I have the same feeling, Sean. Like, obviously it's health, right? And goaltending. You got a good health, you have good goaltending, you got a shot. If they can stay healthy, and I know we've talked about this before the season, about their inability to stay healthy last year, their lack of depth, if they have an injury or two, and they're going to have an injury or two, but if they're going to get the goaltending, then that kind of offsets it a little bit too. I like what I've seen. I think Cassidy's got this team playing with structure. They've been very good in that capacity. Four straight wins. Thompson and Hill have been terrific. Vegas to me is writing a different chapter right now under a new coach with different goaltenders, and is making it a very interesting team to watch right now when expectations internally haven't changed, I don't believe. Externally, I believe expectations went down a little bit, and now they're, through 10 games, they're exceeding them.
Yeah, and it's a small sample size, so let's see, what happens at the quarter pole mark, where we're at at Thanksgiving. Look, I think they're a borderline playoff team. That's what I had going into the season. You need to see what their goaltenders are going to do. Neither one of them has a resume,
right,
to be an elite goaltender. Maybe they do that this year, and that becomes their thing. I will tell you the one thing that you have to be excited about is Jack Eichel, right? Like, he's healthy again. He's had a full off season to get better. The goal he scored the other night,
the loop-de-loop goal, like around and around it went.
Yeah, that's what they've been waiting for, right? Yeah. And that's what everybody's been waiting for Jack Eichel. And if that's who he's going to be now, they're a far different team. They have that game breaker that they've been looking for, and a player who can change games in the blink of an eye. And if that's who he's going to be going forward, then maybe they're a much different team. But again, it's all about, is it sustainable? Can they do this over a long haul? Can they stay healthy? Because there's not a lot behind them. They're not one of those teams that are like, there's five guys down in the minors waiting to come up. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
it gets pretty grim pretty quick if they're not putting out their full NHL lineup.
Right. No, 100%. And the couple of things with them, a couple of stats with them that I think have been impressive is they've outscored opponents 12-2 in the first period. So they're starting games really, really well. And they're 7-1 right now when leading or tied going into the third period. So they're finishing them well too. Starting well, finishing well. A lot of it's goaltending. They've allowed four goals in their last four games, all wins as we talk right now on Tuesday. So it's been good for them. It has not been good for the St. Louis Blues. Five straight losses as we talk right now. 18 goals against in the last three, 6-2 against Nashville, 7-4 against Montreal, which was a bloodbath, then 5-1 against the Los Angeles Kings. And Jordan Binnington gets pulled in the game against the Kings after giving up the fifth goal. The puck did ricochet off of Justin Falk's stick. The defense wasn't hard enough. Binnington couldn't cover his post, all that stuff. It wasn't good. They're down 5-0. He goes off and he chirps the Kings bench. I don't know what he said. It happens in games, but this is not good. And the Blues are talking about unacceptable play, giving up, things along those lines. Those are what we're hearing right now from the St. Louis Blues, which to me is one of those teams that you expect a hard game from every single time they play. That's the way they're coached, and that's the way they've played for a long time. They're not giving you hard games right now. They're easy to beat right now.
Yeah, but they'll get back to it. I mean, that's who they are, right? That's their DNA. That's their identity. And they're talking about it, right? And everybody's losing their mind over Jordan Binnington and what he's doing. And to me, I'm not worried about Jordan Binnington. His numbers look horrible, but the fact that he still has that chip on his shoulder and he's going to leave a game in which he's been embarrassed and he's going to say something, like, that's what's driven Jordan Binnington since he's come into this league. I mean, how many times has he gotten into different kind of scraps and arguments and wars of words. I mean, look at last year, he gets hurt and, he's throwing a bottle at Kadri and, all the other arguments he's gotten into and things that we've looked at and we said, that's not what your goalie should do. Well, that's what Jordan Binnington should do. That's what makes him good. Like is that fierce belief in himself that, he's going to do what he's going to do and he's not going to take anything from anybody. And when he wasn't good last year and the year before that, he had lost that. And then it came back and he was phenomenal in the playoffs. So look, right now he's not very good. They're not very good, but I look at, that outburst and it gives me hope when I look at Jordan Binnington, because that fire is still there and it's just, it hasn't caught yet. But if it catches, I think you see the goalie that we saw in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, and here's the good thing for the Blues, in my opinion, is they had a horror show on Halloween night. They did against LA. They don't play again until Thursday. We're talking here on Tuesday. They don't play again until Thursday. It's at home against the Islanders. And that's good because they just played 5-8. Remember, they had that weird start where they weren't playing many games. They played like two games in the first like 10 days of the season. And then they played, I think, 6-10. 5-8, this losing streak is a 5 losses in a row in 8 days. So it's a lot. But then they go on the road. And they play at Boston, at Philly. They come home against San Jose, at Vegas, at Colorado, at Chicago. There's a back-to-back Boston, Philly. It's a good little break for them, but then it gets really hard again. And I think that they have the wherewithal. They have the institutional knowledge of how to handle hard, right? They do. I agree with you. I think they'll get back to being the team that we kind of figure they would be. Same thing with Colorado Avalanche. Like, I think they'll get back to being that team, but a couple of days off here might be good for them, but they need to have a really good game against the New York Islanders on Thursday at home. Because if not, now you're going on the road, you got a tough stretch and you're feeling terrible. That's why this break is good. Now get a really good game against the Islanders, a team that is beatable right now.
Yeah, and that's, look, with all of these teams, that's all it takes, right? You look at the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mentioned it with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Pittsburgh went out west and just fell apart.
Yeah.
They lost to Seattle. They lost to Vancouver, who had won one game at that point. Like, they were losing games that you were putting in the win column, and you were saying, oh, they're going to be at this point when tonight they play Boston in a national TV game. And, we actually had the argument of who's going to be the better team out of the two at the end of the year. And it was an argument that was great a week ago when they were both running unbelievably hot. And then Pittsburgh, has kind of had the wheels fall off, and you kind of look at it and you say, well, what's the deal with that argument? But I still think Pittsburgh's going to be the better team at the end of the year. I just think that they're a deeper, more talented team with a better coach. So, I think they're going to figure it out. And again, you're not overly worried because it was a West Coast swing and it's 4 games in October. Like,
yeah,
there's still a lot of hockey left to be played.
Yeah. And you know who's got that right now? The New Jersey Devils, right? So they've won 6 of their last 7. And I think they deserve to be talked about with the way that they're playing. But they've got that West Coast swing. That Western Canada trip is starting now with Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, 3-5 for them. Not a back-to-back. So it's a 3-5, but it's Vancouver Tuesday tonight, Thursday at Edmonton, Saturday at Calgary. We'll see where they are when they come back from that trip. But so far, I mean, Sean, we got to give the Devils some credit here, because they're getting goaltending now. Vanacek the last couple of games has been good, right? They're scoring goals, which is great. They're averaging almost 40 shots a game. They're giving up almost just shade over 20. Okay. I think it's like 39 and change and 21 low and change, some in that neighborhood. In their wins, they've given up 7 goals in 6 wins in their 6 wins. So it's very clear. They're not giving up shots. They have the puck a lot. They're generating a lot of offense. And it's really been impressive what I have seen from them. I wrote in the mailbag last week that I'm still concerned about, when adversity strikes midseason, all that stuff. Like, do they have that leader? They don't have that guy, right? Or that core. They're building that core. But none of those guys have enough ammo in the NHL to really stand up in the room and be heard and believed. And like, the room gets silent and everybody leans on their words. Some teams have that. I don't know how valuable that's going to be. We'll see. But I like what I've seen And the key for the Devils is saves. Vanacek's making them. They're winning games.
We opened the season, that first podcast, and we were like, oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
And it was because they were giving up bad rebounds, and they lost to Pittsburgh or Philadelphia because of that. And it was ugly, and the fans had turned almost immediately at the home opener and were all over the coach. And then you look 3 weeks later and it's a completely different story. They shut out the Stanley Cup champions, 1-0. Like that's a good feather in their cap. And then offensively, you know, you see what they're doing. Like Jasper Bratt is elite.
Yeah.
Like I can't wait to see him go against Connor McDavid. Like they're neck and neck, right? And when do you think you would have that conversation? He's been really good. Jack Hughes has been really good. You know, their defense is better than I thought it was. Marino's been a great addition. And I know Pittsburgh had to get rid of John Marino because they had some salary cap issues, but he stepped right in and he's been fantastic for them. So I like what they're doing. I don't know that it's sustainable, you know, and that's a big word we use because we're only 9-10 games into the season and there's so much left to be figured out, but they're better than they were last year.
It's sustainable if they continue to get saves. That's it. If they get saves, and that they're going to be a team that's going to be right there, I think, because I think they're offensively good enough and they generate a lot of possession time, right? That's the key. We won't know, I think, for another 20 games how sustainable it really is for the New Jersey Devils. But if Vanacek or Blackwood, they need both, make saves, they got a shot. And that's been the biggest problem for the Devils. You know, I remember I talked with Mark Recchi, who's doing our coach's room, you know, right now. He's an assistant coach with the Devils. And I asked him, like, we were talking about, like, early in the season, this is what he was writing about, like, early in the season, coaches kind of have an understanding of what to expect. And if you have some institutional knowledge of your team, like he did when he was with the Penguins, you knew it was going to turn. You knew it was going to turn. They never felt it was going to turn in New Jersey because they were going through like 6, 7, 8 goalies. If they don't have to deal with that and they get saves, it'll turn.
No, for sure. And it'd be awesome if it did because they've been in the wilderness for too long.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, I'll let you get back to your work in Helsinki. And it's been fantastic. Pavel Francouz might be sleeping right now. I don't know. But one of the greatest pranks, read Sean's story about it. One of the best pranks you'll hear in hockey. And by the way, you should also listen to the NHL Draft Class podcast because those guys, Adam Kimmelman and Mike Morial, A, they do a great job. But B, they had Connor Bedard on. And he is the projected number one pick in the 2023 draft. So you got to listen to that, especially if you love the draft. And Sean, enjoy the rest of your time in Helsinki.
It shouldn't be a problem. There may be a sauna involved. Who knows? But there's always something to do here. It gets dark at 3:30. So we'll see what happens. But off day tomorrow for everybody. I'm going to sleep like Pavel Francouz and then get after it a little bit and see what we can figure out.
There you go. Enjoy it. And everybody else, enjoy the hockey.